Fred Film Radio.
This is Fred Film Radio. I'm Samantha Sartori from the Gold Coast International Film Festival 2017, Long Island, New York. And today I'm here with Mitra Tabrizian, director, and Cyrus Masoudi, screenwriter of Golem. Good morning, Mitra and Cyrus. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure.
I would like to start with a question for the two of us. Why did you want to make a film about this subject? What was the inspiration behind the screenplay?
The story is loosely inspired by a photographic project I did a few years ago on Iranians in exile, in particular an enigmatic and charismatic Iranian taxi driver, who despite volunteering to participate and liking the project, was still reluctant to tell his story. And shortly after the shoot, he disappeared without a trace. So he created an impression, an intrigue, to say the least. On the basis of some information I had, together with Cyrus, we developed the story, partly fact, partly fiction. Although the fictional part was also inspired by other experiences of exiles in the project, some of whom played themselves in the film. So the real challenge was how to stay close to the real story and maintain the enigma of a man who didn't want to reveal much about himself and hope the audience still identify with him and make their own interpretation.
Mitra, you are a photographer. Was the first image that was in your mind when you started working on it?
The first image?
Yes.
To be honest with you, my experience with the project I did on Iranians in exile, it was almost the city that London that you haven't seen before, the city mm-hmm. of migrants, if you like, yeah. The unseen city, people who live on the edge. And as you notice, if you know London, this is almost, you know, I'm told, is a unique image of London we are presenting. So it was the city almost as another character, which came to my mind first, that to show the city that people haven't seen before, so to speak. Not that people don't, you know where the locations are, but the majority were actually surprised. It's a London that you don't often see.
I see. Did you wrote the script having already in mind Shahab Hosseini as the protagonist, and how did you work with him? How was it working with him?
It was really great working with him. He's an amazing actor, but we didn't have Shahab in mind to begin with. In fact, of course, I'm familiar with Shahab's work, you know, from Separation, when he played a kind of angry and out of control husband and got best supporting actor in Berlin, etc., etc. But I still didn't think he was right for this film when I set up the Separation. So I searched for the main character everywhere, to be honest with you, for a couple of years in London, Paris, Berlin, New York, you name it. And at the end, I decided to go to Tehran, despite it was difficult to bring people from Tehran because there was no British embassy then there. Getting visa and so on was difficult. And when I went there, I saw an early film that he played a very frustrated musician who couldn't get his film out in the public. And he played this brilliant, understated performance and then I knew it's the guy for the film. And my fixer was obviously, it's like, no, there's no way you can get this guy. He's George Clooney of Iran, and he's not going to come on in small film in London with the first time director, etc. Forget about him. But I said, well, have I got to lose? And I went and met him, and we hit it up from the outset, and he really liked the story. And when he came to London, we just spent 10 days rehearsing, so to speak, discussed the character. That's all we did, discussed the story and the character. And he understood it so well that he did such a brilliant performance. It's all from him, Akash came as a director, directed him. Just he understood the character and came out with the ideas of how to deliver.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. He got the point of every scene, you know, on first reading, and you know, even a lot of things that were left unwritten, he picked up on immediately and managed to translate that, you know, the way he does on screen, which is so captivating.
Great. And well, talking about this, how much of the story and dialogue ended up in the movie? And how did you two collaborate on adapting the screenplay for the shoot? How did you decide to, and in addition, how did you decide to reveal some parts of Gollum's past and to withhold other parts?
Okay, well, going back to, in terms of the collaboration, I found it a very interesting process because I was coming from a literary background, and Mitra, obviously, from a photographic and a more visual background. So for the two of those different mindsets, I guess, to combine, it was a very interesting. It took a little while for us to get used to each other and where we were coming from, but I think once we understood each other and we shared a common vision, then I think it all fell into place quite nicely in terms of the collaboration. And as soon as Mitra came to me with this story, my background is in French literature, so her idea of taking a slightly more existential approach to the subject matter for me was very interesting and one of the reasons why I jumped on board the project. I think Mitra...
Yeah, I mean, in terms of basically, to be honest with you, from the outset, we wanted to make something different with a rather unconventional approach to the narratives, i.e. we didn't want necessarily to do three-act structure and with a lot of backstory, but enough information to indicate, if you like, what happens to a man who's been through a revolution, a war, and a change of landscape. For instance, the war. I mean, we know that, I mean, war is a very important part of Iranian collective memory. And we know that war is damaging. We know it took a long time, Iran-Iraq war, etc., etc. But what was important to the story, it's that he was only 14. He was a kid when he joined the war, for instance. So he grew up too fast. He saw too much. He became disappointed or lost his faith too early. So those were the aspects that we were interested in, for instance. In relation to family, let's say, we know that Iranian families are fetishized. It's a culture which fetishizes Iran's family. But he's closer to... he feels closer to a stranger, i.e. the guy who runs the garage, than his own family, let's say. So so we didn't need that much backstory in that respect. He's closer to one of the characters in Albert Camus', for instance, books, than a more conventional character. So we didn't feel the urge to give a lot of backstory what happened to his family and so on. The dynamics we thought is enough to indicate that.
I see. And I have the same question about his relationship with the two men. How did you decide which part to reveal and which part to withhold? Who are the two men whom he sees at the restaurant and who end up following him with an offer? What is the nature of this mysterious relationship?
I think, without giving away too much of the story...
Yeah, sure.
one of the men... knew Gollum from the war, as the story suggests.
Yes.
And hence the offer, which is kept deliberately ambiguous, to join them. He knows Gollum's past and what he's capable of, and therefore he thinks he can deliver what they want him to do. But what they want him to do is deliberately kept ambiguous. At this stage, I think I'd better not say too much because
of course, sure.
Take away the story, you know.
Absolutely. We see Gollum in his taxi at different times with different passengers. And most of the time, he
we see him in conversation with the passengers, or something, we see some action happening between them, like the fighting scene. There is only one exception, that is the scene with this young female passenger, silent, sitting in the back, where nothing happened. Can you talk about a little bit about that scene?
Yeah, precisely. It's the scene with the young woman basically shows how deeply he has shot himself down. He's a young and attractive man, and yet he's lost all his desire. He doesn't even notice the woman is looking at him or might be interested in him. And this happens after the scene that he's trying to explain to his nephew, the rapper, the reason he joined the war. And we're still not sure even whether it's true or not what he's saying, he just makes it like a joke at the end. But we know at the very end, he seems disturbed. So these are the little moments to show rather than tell what's happening to this guy, basically. Yeah. And I'm glad you like the scene. It looks like it's working.
Yes. All the elements of the film, including acting, lighting, mise-en-scene, suggest the presence of an invisible and mysterious forces that dramatically change the lives of the character, and we will never clearly know what these forces are. Can you please talk about this?
I think from my point of view, in terms of the writing of it, it was very much a case of wanting to leave certain things unsaid, to leave the focus on the central character and first of all the inertia, and then the turmoil that he goes through trying to rediscover his humanity, and of course there's leaving it unsaid, unspoken. I think the Mitra, with her direction, did a very good job of bringing out those tensions, as you say, with the mise-en-scene, with the mm-hmm. with the lighting and all of that, and that really, for me, just upped that feeling of pressure and as you say, exactly, the forces that are beyond any of our control, really, and that was very much a deliberate strategy.
Again, without giving away too much, there is a tension building up in the story, suggested through mise-en-scene, as mm-hmm. you pointed out, rather than confrontations with other characters. So in this respect, it's a rather unusual approach to the storytelling. At another level, a more allegorical reading could suggest the tension the migrant exilee may feel, living on the edge, so to speak, regarding of being politically involved or not.
It's really a huge presence in the movie. I would like to talk about some technical aspects of the movie. The lighting was very effective at creating the mood and the atmosphere of the film. And it also allowed to see the subtlety of the performances. Can you say a few words about how you approach the lighting?
Sure. I just wanted a very naturalistic approach to the lighting, not to draw attention to it, so to speak. Oh. I think it hasn't been lit, which is rather difficult to achieve, in fact.
Yes.
And we had an excellent DOP, Dewald Okuma, on board, very experienced technically. And for the taxi shots, for instance, he just used an iPhone, believe it or not. Yes, for the street shots, we used special lenses designed for night shoots. So, in fact, didn't use any lights at all, and they were sensitive enough to pick up any available lights. So, overall, we've managed to create what we might call a raw mise-en-scene, mm-hmm. Which I think fits the story well.
I am interested how you want to. I want the film to be perceived in terms of not only this festival, but wherever the film will go next.
We are planning to release the film in the UK early next year, 2018. Hopefully by February, we are hoping to release in the UK. And then... European, you know, I mean, the plan is first to go for UK and then Europe. And for America, we're still negotiating. I don't know whether we will have American distributor or not, but our first aim is UK and Europe. Okay. And simultaneously, we'll come on to cinemas and VOD. That's the plan. That's usually for the art house cinemas because it's limited release. They do both VOD and cinema release at the same time. So that's the plan.
Thanks a lot to Mitra Trabizian and Cyrus Masudi for being with us today. From Gold Coast International Film Festival 2017, Long Island, New York, I'm Samantha Sartori for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.